Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website, foundation@hearstcastle.com, to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Gilroy, California. Right now, we're with Brian Applegarth, who's an industry expert and consultant in the world of cannabis. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me. It's good to meet you.
Yeah. I was told that one of your areas of expertise is cannabis tourism and relative to Oakland, California.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us that story.
You know, I work in the intersection of cannabis and travel, and I've been doing that since about 2014.
How did that start?
I grew up in California, fifth generation.
NorCal?
Yeah, like San Jose, San Francisco, Santa Cruz, Sacramento, Oakland. My family's kind of dotted all over. I traveled extensively as a younger gentleman. And
CIA?
Yeah, no, not so much. More like gypsy backpacker. But yeah, and I lived long term in Japan and a few countries in Italy. I really enjoyed traveling, really took to it. So when I came back to California in 2013, there was this thing that was new that I didn't know existed, and it was cannabis shops. I had no clue. Mm-hmm. So when I got back to California in 2013, I walked into my first cannabis shop, and for me, it was like a tidal wave. It was like, this is the next frontier of travel. It got me excited.
And then so that's you understood it ahead of the curve?
Maybe, like in my own way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it resonated with your heartstrings.
It really did. I love travel. I've never been adverse to cannabis. Living in Northern California, it's part of our culture.
Yeah.
I saw opportunity, and then I had this very fortunate surprise of really falling in love with the story of cannabis and hemp. And I'm really blessed. I love what I do, and it's this amazing time to be part of that.
So you work with Oakland, California, Visit Oakland.
I do.
Explain what you do, what you bring to the table for them.
Yeah, happy to. So I'm the co-founder of an agency called Cultivar Strategies, and we are a strategic marketing and events agency. So we work with DMOs like Visit Oakland to help understand, coordinate, and create strategy and stories and content around the cannabis travel trend. Cultivar Strategies, we paired up with a travel intelligence company to do a national survey back in 2020, which was a deep dive on the cannabis-motivated travel audience in the United States. Everything from a CBD massage to, you know, going to Humboldt and doing a flight of joints and tasting all the different types of strains of cannabis. And everything in between. I mean, culinary, sustainability, all these themes. So that's what we do. We're an agency with Visit Oakland specifically. We were tasked to come in, assess the destination, do some quick education, and then we moved right into developing the Visit Oakland Cannabis Trail.
And explain that. How does the trail work? Say, I want to come to Oakland, mm-hmm. and it kind of it resonates with me. Oh my God, that'd be cool to do.
Yeah.
How does it work?
Yeah, you know, I'm happy to. So, you know, the Visit Oakland Cannabis Trail is a curated trail in Oakland, California, which is a historic pioneering destination for human rights as well as cannabis legalization. So it's got some beautiful storytelling. So the trail, if you visit it today, there's 8 dispensaries that are featured. Half of those are more legacy, like storytelling about the cannabis and like the roots of cannabis in Oakland, and you can feel that history. The other half of them are these very innovative frontier models where you can have a very immersive, interactive experience in that dispensary.
Give us an example of one where that would
happen. Sure. So like one of them is Blunts and More, which is in Oakland, and Tucky Blunt is the owner of that. Coincidental last name.
I was going
to
say.
Totally.
He had to go into that business.
I know. So anyways, Tucky's story is he was arrested and charged with a felony like 12, 13, 14 years ago. And when you look at the war on drugs, you see these communities that were kind of targeted around the war on drugs for incarceration, things like that. So he was an example of that. And in today's cannabis industry, there's these equity programs to really address and try to right the wrongs. Mm-hmm. They call it restorative justice in a way.
I was in Eco Cannabis downtown, and that's a classic example because I think they're mandated by the city of Oakland to hire and engage at least 50% from that community.
They are. Yeah, they're trying to really build this industry the right way. And Tucky was the first social equity owner for a retail shop license in the world. Mm-hmm. So he has a cultural landmark along the California Cannabis Trail, the larger 9-county trail. So there's Tucky, and then you have Harborside Wellness, which has a deep wellness history, as well as a little bit of activism. You visited
I went there, right? And it was kind of like going to the Whole Foods of cannabis.
Right.
I almost went blind with the amount of different items they had there.
Yeah, and they also have like live plants. You can buy clones there. They have a consultation program where you can have your own wellness, health and wellness consultation one-on-one.
Let's back up in time because I know that Harborside and a few others started when technically marijuana and whatnot was illegal, other than for medical use.
Very true.
And so that's what Harborside started out doing, was catering to that medical clientele.
You're right.
Which is still powerful and huge within the spectrum.
It is, you know, and this is the exciting part about cannabis and why it's so special in travel is cannabis, as during the pandemic, it was designated essential because cannabis is medicine. So there's this interesting discussion around leisure travel that happens a lot. Cannabis gets compared to wine a lot, but this medicinal side is where the plant really exists. And then, of course, this middle lane of just well-being, cannabis as a toolkit to improve your quality of life. So on the Oakland Cannabis Trail, we have 8 dispensaries right now, and we have about 13, 14 what we call kind of sensory experiences.
That's cool.
Sure. So it's like we really looked at the nature, as well as some of these really cool foodie spots, as well as some art experiences that paired well with cannabis enhancement. So the idea is if you visit a dispensary, here's some hand-selected, sensory-rich experiences. That may come in the form of taste buds. It may come in the form of a beautiful art exhibit or museum, or it may be an afternoon on Lake Merritt hanging outside and watching the water and the activity around the lake. So
dig a little deeper on cannabis tourism.
Sure.
Are there people that specifically, say, come to Oakland because they went, oh my God, this would be a cool trip?
Yeah.
All centered around cannabis.
Yeah. You know, most people prefer to make it a 2-day adventure. So it's usually a night in a hotel. There's a handful of hotels that are incredibly cannabis friendly. Some are inhalation friendly as well. But really a 2-day adventure where you visit, I would recommend 2 shops the first day and then go to an activity in the afternoon. And if you feel like it, do another one. And then same thing on the second day, maybe visit 1 or 2 more shops. Be sure you do a legacy shop as well as an innovative frontier shop and just have fun.
Define a legacy shop.
Yeah, so like Blunts and More would be one of those. Harborside would be one of those. There's one that's in by Lake Merritt that would be one of those. And then the one you went to, Eco, is kind of newer. It's right up in Uptown. It's beautiful and shiny. It's got great displays. And at Eco Cannabis, you can actually smell the flower and look at it through a magnifying glass and look at all the little trichomes and all the medicine stuff that's on the plant and learn about it. So there's these little experiences in each dispensary that really make the experience shine.
That's really cool. Dig a little deeper about cannabis. We talked before we went live about hemp, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Hemp is legal and has been legal, but it's taken a place as an essential tool in the toolkit.
It has. Yeah, I'm going to start and do a little history real quick. Yeah. So when you look back at the role and the evolution of the hemp and cannabis plant in relationship to like the human species, not to go that far back, but it goes back to ancient China. And the first written documentation you see of cannabis and hemp is attributed to the yin and yang in ancient China, the sense of balance, right? Mm-hmm. And then it goes from there. You find cannabis in India. They found cannabis pollen in Egypt in the tombs. You find it in Greece. You can track the migration of this plant, and you can find a couple different varietals. There's some that are up in the hills of like the Afghani Kush Mountains, right? Does it sound familiar? So there's the Kush Mountains of Afghanistan, where those more like sedative winter small bush. And then there's these other varietals or cultivars, we say these days, or strains. Cultivars is kind of the new terminology. But there's these other cultivars that really grew close to the equator, like in India and Thailand, places like this, taller, much more cerebral, much more summer, right? And then when you look at that range, there's all these different varietals that are hybridized between those two. And you have this beautiful spectrum of cultivars. Now you should also understand, to your point with hemp, so hemp, you have these CBD-rich strains where it's got trace amounts of the THCA molecule, which is the acidic cannabinoid in the plant, which is different than activated THC. So there's a lot to unpack here. It's a very complex plant. This is one of my favorite explanations about today. When you think about craft beer and you have everything from non-alcoholic beer to 2% little daytime IPA, you know, all the way up to three triple IPAs that are 20%+ of alcohol, cannabis cultivars and varietals and products offer that same arc today, where it's not unpredictable. It's not all super high THC. It got that way because it was underground, but now it's course correcting, and you're seeing much more balanced and low THC cultivars that I think are really going to meet the moment for mainstream consumers.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm old enough, I remember hashish when it purely for entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Where is hashish today in that spectrum, and what are some of the therapeutic elements and qualities?
Oh, great question. So I'm getting deeper and deeper on hashish. I've always enjoyed it. You know, I smoked it for the first time over in Europe. I have some interesting hashish stories from Europe. For me, it was always in a travel context around friends and having, you know, a spliff or something. So yeah, hashish is really, a lot of people are looking at hashish as almost like the fine wine bottle.
Exactly, yeah.
Right, because you have the plant, just like grapes to wine, right?
So you have to talk for a moment, 30 seconds, on creation of hashish.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a condensation, right?
Yeah, it is. And I'm unpacking it still myself. Mm-hmm. I went really down the flower rabbit hole. But now the hashish is this art of this ice bubble hash, you know, and this is something that it's different micron nets, and there's a process to it. So as you alchemize a grape into a fine bottle of wine, think of hash as if you're alchemizing or using alchemy to create a fine, beautiful temple ball of hash. And these are going to, I believe that in the future, hashish is going to really be that next frontier of this sophisticated craft. A lot of it, too, is very DIY. Mm-hmm. You can do it at home if you just read about it a little bit, and it's non-volatile, yeah.
But do you understand, have you figured out any of the therapeutic?
Oh, the therapeutic applications. I want to know it deeper, but in my, so hash, my own personal experience, the way I would position it in this conversation is, and this is a very important conversation, I'm going to point to ayahuasca tourism, because hashish provides effects that are incredibly powerful in a wonderful way if used mindfully. And there's different types of hashish from different regions and different ways to make it. And using hashish in the context of journeying or having an experience or working through PTSD, things that are maybe a little bit more high dose and a little bit more...
So some parallels to psychedelics. Then.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, and I wouldn't leave cannabis out for that either. You know, kind of a micro, like it's almost like my friend Swami calls it, the everyday psychedelic cannabis, you know. So yeah, I think that psychedelic component of cannabis and hemp are incredible medicine, but you got to approach it with reverence and with mindset and setting, and you have to do it in a way that's intentional, and then it's incredible.
Let's talk about therapeutic qualities. Mm-hmm. Even like my wife has cancer and she takes it totally therapeutically for specific needs.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not a doctor, so none of this is medical advice, but the science has shown, some research has shown that cannabis can help in a few ways. One is with, like, let's just say you're going through chemo, the ability to temper some of the side effects from the chemo treatment. Cannabis is an incredible tool. It helps calm the nausea, it lets you feel better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So as far as using it as a tool to feel better, that's a thing.
It's a huge thing.
Oh, of course.
And cancer patients would be rebellious if it was not available.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's important. And it's been used for years in that capacity. This goes back to the AIDS epidemic. I mean, this is why cannabis is legal today. In a global pandemic, that was killing human beings, man. They couldn't eat. And cannabis showed up on the front lines of this epidemic, and it helped a community in miraculous ways.
Wow.
And that was the portal to today, where cancer, glaucoma, all these other ailments started. Mm-hmm. And then you start looking at the history of medical cannabis. And I mean, we live in less than 100 years of cannabis being without our grasp. It used to be on the shelves of pharmacies in California back in the early 1900s.
Yeah.
So we are in this very unique window, and I think it's important for people to understand that in cannabis was part of the medical U.S. Pharmacopoeia journal from 1950 to 1941. It was listed in there as a medicine.
Yeah.
And it's important to acknowledge the capacity of this plant, right? So going back to the cancer and other ailments, another interesting capability of some of the cannabis molecules, again, it's a highly evolved plant. One of those that's being looked into deeper is a mechanism called apoptosis, where there's a theory that cannabis, the right strains, cultivars, have the ability to identify certain cell types, including cells that are cancerous, and in a targeted way, cause them to self-implode. Now, there needs more research, right? So again, caveat, I'm not a doctor,
so
but from
frontier,
what I've read, it's incredible.
Another dynamic is I have people within my family that are ADD and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Marijuana makes them normal.
Right. Totally. Helps balance it out. Well, that's why, like, understanding the properties, like, at the end of the day, cannabis symbolizes for me homeostasis and balance, yin and yang. Like, mm-hmm. I go back to the ancient understanding of it because I believe if approached with time and intention, that's what it stewards. And that goes to ADHD balancing. That goes to when you can't eat, it helps you eat.
Mm-hmm.
That goes to when you have inflammation, it tries to reduce that inflammation. So the intelligence behind this plant to be able to see and understand ailments and help course correct that. The endocannabinoid system that we all have works toward that, bringing your body back into optimum balance. So if any of your other systems, your skeletal system, your immune system, your reproductive system, if there's anything has gone off or gone a bit awry, cannabis and your endocannabinoid system and your endocannabinoids, including the phytocannabinoids from the plant, it works to bring your body back into optimum balance. And that's what its whole function is, just be the master modulator.
Interesting. And for those that have like joint pain or chronic muscle pain,
yeah,
they're very targeted
mm-hmm.
medicines for them.
There's external and internal application, right? So you have cannabis in tincture form where you put it in your mouth. There's all kinds of products, everybody. And when he says targeted, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's from suppositories for colon cancer all the way up. There's these different applications people are using cannabis for, as well as topically, as you mentioned, right? Where if you have joint pain, chronic pain, many people say, and I've experienced this for myself, that cannabis in whole plant, full entourage effect, plant therapeutics, you can do these spot treatments to manage your chronic pain and to improve your quality of life.
Very cool. So we met up in Gilroy, California.
We did, yeah.
What brought you here today?
So I've been over near Aptos area for the last couple weeks, escaping the heat from the Palm Springs desert where I live now.
And there are growers over there, right?
There are. They actually, Desert Hot Springs, which is one of the 9 cities of Coachella Valley, they had the first indoor cultivation in the state of California. And they're extremely progressive with, specifically Desert Hot Springs, with innovation in cannabis. Mm-hmm. Cannabis travel, too.
Really hot growing, huh?
It's very, yeah, it's a hot region. Yeah. It's rapidly growing, and the cannabis travel trend's growing. I mean, you're seeing major destinations like Visit Oakland adopt this and integrate it into the story of the city. And the really fun part about that, including the Oakland Cannabis Trail and the sensory experiences, is cannabis is a story and a tool that just uplifts the entire community and story of the destination. Hats off to the Visit Oakland team, I mean, for having the vision and also acknowledging that cannabis is central in Oakland Bay Area history and culture, from the beatniks to the hippies to the back to the land movement to the urban centers to the war on drugs. Cannabis is stitched into our story of California, specifically the Bay Area North.
And again, to clarify what you do, you're basically a consultant. You don't have your own retail travel tourism for cannabis.
No, I mean, we really consider ourselves a travel company with a specialization in cannabis, hemp, and tourism and travel, the visitor economy.
So consultants,
yeah. We do have an event license to throw cannabis events.
Really?
Yes, which a cannabis event license.
Where would you do that and when would you, why? Where?
I mean, it's basically commercial. So if we use our Type 14, which we'll probably use this year or next year for the first time, it's going to allow us to have cannabis retail sales as well as consumption on site. So it's like having a cannabis festival where people can either drink a cannabis beverage, smoke a blunt, smoke a joint, and meet the culture, really.
It's gone so mainstream. I think it was an Eco Cannabis, and there one of their displays was Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they've got on the bandwagon. Who would ever imagine?
Oh, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of players that are in now. So Pabst Blue Ribbon, like you said, major brand, right? The first one to market was Lagunitas.
Oh, really?
So they launched Hi-Fi Hops in partnership with a group called Cannacraft up in Sonoma County. And they rolled out a beverage called Hi-Fi Hops. Now it's called Hi-Fi Sessions.
What's the taste profile?
You know, this is an interesting. So the fun part about cannabis, too, is like it's basically these zero. A lot of them are these zero calorie. It's all the options. But cannabis by nature is kind of a healthy, very organic mindset, especially in NorCal. Regenerative ag, all that stuff. So you get a lot of like zero calorie, tasty, bubbly waters where you have these nice effects. There's a range of dosing, right? Like I said, so it's just like the craft beer. You have ones that have very little THC, if any. You have ones that have 2.5 milligrams. You have ones that have 5, and you have ones that have 10. And just to put that in context for people that don't fully understand, the state of California allows for 100 milligrams of cannabis to be in one package. And no more than 10 milligram doses. So basically, you're talking about a fraction of one state-approved kind of 10 milligram limit.
Let's talk about some of the struggles among growers right now, because they're having a tough time. And explain why.
Yeah, so you have an amazing recent history, I would say. But you have an amazing, it's not Asian China, but it's Northern California and the hippie movement, the back to the land movement and the hippie trail. It's all intersects. So what happened is Northern California became the seed bank for global cannabis genetics through that story. That's the very abridged story. You know, but a lot of those genetics banks live in the Emerald Triangle up in Northern California. So just from a like a varietal cultivar perspective, it's incredible how many different types of seeds exist up there. Now, it's been a tough couple years because taxes. You know, it's an industry coming off this underground, quote-unquote, market. And now it goes from this traditional market that had, by the way, very well-established networks all over the place. You know, you have this legal market that came in with taxation, but that's regulation and clipboards. And it's been this negotiation trying
but,
to...
But some of the legal growers are struggling to survive financially right now.
Very true. Yeah, the taxes are crippling right now from the state and local both level. People see cannabis as an opportunity to get out of debt, and there's this overtaxation. There's also a major issue with some of the legislators and elected officials not fully understanding hemp and cannabis. So when you have people making the laws that don't fully understand, nor kind of like fully respect, I would say, in a lot of situations, like the capabilities of this plant as a tool for well-being, it creates for a very difficult landscape. And unfortunately, a lot of people have lost a lot. There's been a lot of promises that have been broken.
And some suicides.
There's been suicide rates have gone up. It's some really harsh realities, and it's not easy. I have a lot of people I know that have left, you know, and retired it and said, we're done, because it has such a negative, aside from the economic devastation, you got to realize a lot of those legacy communities had a certain quality of life, not just from cannabis sales, but from community. And when you have to tag every part of your plant and put it into a computer every day versus just go and grow it naturally, it becomes a different type of relationship. And that's been a kind of sad to see the shift of that and the struggles of the legacy community.
Bottom line, it follows that there would be an inducement to then go back and become an illegal grower.
Yeah, and the short answer, there's probably some of that, for sure. I mean, you got to realize, I think Humboldt, I'm going to try to remember these numbers, I heard them last week. I believe there's 15,000 small farmers, and I think what's left, I think it's 1,500, maybe less.
Wow.
So I think that, you know, a lot of people either packed it up, sold their land. There's a lot of that happening. There's some people that have gone in hard into consulting. So now they're flying places internationally because they're, the brain trust is crazy mature in that region. So you have this knowledge. So people are finding other avenues. Another thing that destinations are looking at per Visit Oakland are these, like, how does travel exist in travel and tourism? Which is one reason I also picked that, is like, it's fun. And you get to talk about culture and stories, and you get to be a beacon for safety for visitors and be a resource to hotels and all these different conversations to help just normalize the discussion.
That's really interesting. Loop back to Oakland and the Cannabis Trail for a moment. Dig a little deeper.
Yeah, so, you know, other parts, if you go on the Visit Oakland website, you can find this Visit Oakland Cannabis Trail. And there's a couple different pieces of content. One of those is kind of how to travel the trail, which gives recommendations, kind of what to do, how to do it, demonstrates. It's a five-step process. So there's like a guide on there.
Would it be geographic too, where to start, where to end?
Yeah.
Physically within Oakland?
Oh, 100%. You'll see the little pins on the maps. There's little profiles about each spot. There's also these stories about places like Oaksterdam University. So Oaksterdam University is a global brand in cannabis education and advocacy. And this is another Oakland story. I mean,
Going back 26 years.
Yeah, exactly. And Oaksterdam has been the leader of mainstream cannabis education. That was one of the first things I did. So I went to Oaksterdam after I stepped away from this corporate job I was in and miserable in. I started learning about the industry and deeper about the plant. So Oaksterdam, there's a big story there. You know, they went through all kinds of raids and these hurdles and these milestones. It's really important in my work to kind of pay homage to those brave, brave pioneers, because those were some hard front lines at certain times, and Oakland was in the middle of that. Also, Oakland created different programs like medical delivery programs. They had Measure Z, which made a space for cannabis lounges. I mean, they were very visionary in supporting their community because they knew cannabis was so central. So Oakland's been amazing to watch. So you have the Visit Oakland Trail, you have Oaksterdam stories, you have the how-to guide. There's also, I believe, a blog post on there by the Ganja Traveler explaining what the experience is in when you travel the trail. So I would recommend you visit the Oakland website and dig into all that and find out what stops are best for you.
Okay, and then you were alluding to another place you wanted to go.
Yeah, so I think I'll just also share that, you know, Cultivar Strategies, we're a strategic marketing and events agency. We specialize in travel. We work with destinations. We also produced the California State Fair Cannabis Awards.
Oh, wow.
And we also produced the activation, the cannabis exhibit on site at the California State Fair this year.
So you can get a blue ribbon at the State Fair.
People got blue ribbons. They got gold medals. And the beautiful part about this is this competition is state agency sanctioned through the CDFA, through the state of California. It's very groundbreaking. The California State Fair is a 166-year-old tradition, and it's the agricultural celebration of our state. And this year, in 2022, cannabis was celebrated alongside cheese, craft beer, wine, and olive oil as a new darling crop. I say new with a big caveat, because hemp was being grown. There's hemp artifacts all through the missions of California. There's hemp cultivation history on the Sonoma coast when the Russians were there in the mid-1800s. Wow. So I say new, the new today.
New iteration.
Yeah. So the California State Fair, there was gold medals awarded to about 67 farms in California that were the award-winning farms. It was just flower. So we celebrated the plant in the ground. And then at the state fair itself in July, we had 17 days. We welcomed people to the California State Fair cannabis exhibit. We welcomed over 85,000 people through this exhibit. And it was an educational exhibit where you could see AC/DC hemp plants. You could learn about the endocannabinoid system. You could learn about the science behind your receptors.
30 second on endocannabinoids.
Yeah, so endocannabinoids are internal, basically therapeutic compounds, chemicals that we internally make as human beings that dock on the receptors of our endocannabinoid systems. And that's the endocannabinoid system. This is the hemp plant and the cannabis plant totally aside. What we've learned is that when we ingest cannabis and hemp, this plant works with this system directly. They co-evolved. So you flush your body with the therapeutic compounds of the hemp and cannabis plant, and they also dock on the receptors. And what they're finding is this is a very key system in our body. It was discovered in the 1990s, so it's still getting out there, mm-hmm. so to speak.
That's so cool. Brian, to learn more about your world, where would you direct somebody?
Visit cultivarstrategies.com. Mm-hmm. You can also just Google Brian Applegarth. You'll probably see some articles on cannabis travel. My personal website is brianapplegarth.com. That's APPLEGARTH, Brian with an I. And I'd love to hear from anyone with questions. I'm very passionate about this space. And Tom, thanks again for having me on.
You're welcome. And before we go, visit Oakland. They have a website, right? Visitoakland.com.
Yep. Yes.
And you would find the cannabis trail there.
You sure will, right there alongside everything else.
I love it. Thanks again, Brian Applegarth. What a pleasure to meet up in Gilroy, California.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
Yeah. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. We've been visiting with Brian Applegarth, an expert in the world of cannabis.
What? You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst. From swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guest house overlooking the Pacific Ocean, these experiences are unparalleled in their historical relevance and grandeur. The foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to preserve the past to inspire future generations of dreamers. This is accomplished through the youth education program focused on deserving junior high students across California. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, one of the most awe-inspiring locations in the world. The legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture, is woven into the foundation at Hearst Castle's mission. Julia Morgan's life can continue to inspire and empower young women and young men all over the world. This is one of the few opportunities to donate to such an important cause that not only changes the lives and perspectives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors. Please go to the website foundation@hearstcastle.com to learn more about how you can help us with our important mission.
Why don't you go where Harlem sits? Port and other ribs. Spangled gowns upon a bevy of highbrow from down the levee, all misfits. Putting on the ribs.
Why, that's where each and every Lulu Bell goes every Thursday evening with her swell bow-rubbing elbows. Come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits putting on the ritz.